Will Turkey's opposition be able to end Recep Tayyip Erdogan's grip on power? The president's facing a serious challenge in next week's election. He's outperformed rivals for two decades. But with a united opposition, could this vote bring change? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. It's an important election that could change more than just the head of state. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is hoping to extend his term after more than 20 years in power. But recent opinion polls suggest he's not the outright favourite. High inflation and a perceived slow response to devastating earthquakes have hit his popularity, and some voters are now turning to a new candidate. So what does that mean for Turkish politics and the economy? We'll explore these questions with our guests, but first, this report by Katya Lopez-Hodayan.
Despite massive support rallies like this one with nearly 2 million people, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is facing his toughest political battle yet. He's seeking a third term, but opinion polls suggest he's not the clear favorite. The president is now hoping rallies like these will change that.
The opposition is already looking for excuses for their prospective defeat in the elections. They're trying to provoke us. When that didn't work, they turned to insults.
This is his main contender, 74-year-old Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu. He's backed by a six-party opposition alliance. He's pledged to reverse many of Erdogan's policies, including a return to a parliamentary democracy, limiting public spending, and a major shift in foreign relations.
We are not going to leave the fate of the Turkish Republic in the hands of one person. No one will accept the words of just one person.
Erdogan is a conservative politician with a large support base. He's been widely credited with establishing Turkey as a regional military power and leading years of economic growth.
The reason why this party keeps winning is that because it delivered to voters certain material benefits. And this is the first time that magic seems not to be working because of the economy.
In recent years, voters across the country have become more and more frustrated. The cost of living is rising. In October, inflation soared to 86%, the highest since 2016. Although data for April showed a recovery, 44% is still high, and many goods are too expensive.
My son lives abroad, and I cannot go visit him anymore. The exchange rates have skyrocketed, and we can't afford anything. We were told the rates would not go up anymore, but look at the levels it's reached now.
Whoever wins on May 14th will have to manage a struggling economy and a politically divided nation. Katya Lopez-Hodayan for Inside Story.
Let's bring in our guests from Istanbul. Onur Erim, president of Dragoman Strategies, a defense think tank, and author of a book on Turkey's election system. From Pittsburgh, North Carolina, W. Robert Pearson, a Turkish foreign policy specialist and former U.S. ambassador in Ankara. And also from Istanbul, Sinan Ulgen, chairman of the Center for Economic and Foreign Policy Studies and a former Turkish diplomat. A warm welcome to you all. I'd like to begin in Istanbul with Sinan. Sinan, I've been speaking to various Turkish political observers, journalists and the like, politicians as well, and asked them a very simple question: who's going to win this election? And everybody has said to me that it's too close to call. But that's not your opinion, is it? What do you think?
I think that the opposition will win. They have a slight margin, which they are likely to maintain. The reason why I think that is, first of all, based on polling data, but secondly, also at the dynamic of the campaign. On the campaign side track, the opposition has done a relatively good job because they've been able to campaign with several different leaders at the same time. Whereas the campaign on the side of the government is done, and Erdogan himself carries a very heavy load. But on the other side, you have the challenger, Kılıçdaroğlu himself, you have Akşener, the chairwoman of İYİ Parti, you have the two popular mayors, Ekrem İmamoğlu, the mayor of Istanbul, and Mansur Yavaş, the mayor of Ankara, all doing the campaigning at several different corners of the country. So as a result, I think that the opposition will have, will go to the finish line with a slight margin.
Also in Istanbul, I want to bring in Onur Erim. Onur, do you agree with our other guest in Istanbul that this is the opposition's fight to win?
Well, to be honest with you, in any two-man race, and this is what it turned out to be pretty much, not to be disrespectful to the other two candidates, but everybody and even themselves consider them to be kind of not be a very big contender. So this race is actually between Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu and President Erdogan. So it is very likely that there won't be a landslide victory no matter who wins, and especially for the first round. My assessment, and I know you don't have time to discuss all this, but my experience is that President Erdogan will indeed win in the first round with a comparatively comfortable margin. And I don't consider in the first round, my consideration of comfortable lead is somewhere between 2 points and up. Now, as opposed to the dynamics of the campaigns, I think that the opposition has kind of what they try to present as a group of difference of opinions or different background people coming together is now being perceived as eight different people trying to compete for the same seat, and they have demonstrated, I think, a very bad move on their part. They have demonstrated right. In the last month and a half during the campaign that there are definitely a lot of issues that they cannot agree. And people are puzzled. The voters are puzzled as to what if these guys win, if they sit on the presidential table, because there's eight of them total, how are they going to agree on important things? Even more so, how are they going to agree on urgent matters, which is, I think, a big, big question mark in the heads of all voters in Turkey, whether they're supporting the opposition or supporting Erdogan.
Ambassador Pearson, this has been a 20-year rule for President Erdogan. He's certainly been in the job long enough to have seen a lot of things. Do you think he's losing his touch? He's been very criticised over his handling of the earthquake and the economy. Do you think it's time for another leader?
You know, I think there's an interesting comparison with 20 years ago when this government won decisively against the then existing government because of a lack of trust after the aftermath of a major earthquake and a economic crisis. So in some strange way, the world seemed to have turned back to much the same scenario and much the same concern about whether to have faith in this government, given the problems it has now made visible with the economy, with recovery of the country, and with trust from the public, and the one that existed 20 years ago. I do think that it's unlikely that one of these candidates will win a majority in the round this weekend. And I do think that in some sense, the real campaign will begin on Monday morning or Sunday evening and last for the next 2 weeks. I think it's going to be a drawn-out affair, and we may not know good results, and we may not know good government, that is to say, effective government, for a while.
Sinan, one of the things that we've seen in this election that's been very interesting to me, I was speaking to a media analyst who suggested that Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu hasn't really had that much publicity on state-owned television, most of it being very sympathetic to Erdogan. But we've seen other leaders within the coalition, Akşener, for example, who you mentioned earlier, get a little bit of publicity, the idea being that that could split the opposition vote. Do you think that's something that is a play at play here?
No, because there is no risk of splitting the opposition vote. The opposition has one single candidate. However, they are running, for the parliamentary race. Although they are in an alliance, every party will have its own set of representatives in parliament. So there are separate campaigns for parliament. That is also the case for the ruling alliance, where you have AK Party and MHP that will end up having different parliamentary groups. So they also have separate campaigns. But the initial question that you raised is essentially the reason why the elections in Turkey, although they are free, they are not fair, because the government party is relying heavily on state resources, but also on the weight of the state-led press, including TRT, which gives much bigger coverage to the content and actions of the ruling party. And that's certainly an imbalance that Turkey needs to redress if it's going to improve its democratic standards.
Ono, one of the things that President Erdogan has done is give government workers a 45% pay rise in the days running up to the election. He's probably hoping that that's going to be enough to swing the vote for him. But 5 million young people are now eligible to vote, and they by no means have picked a side. Do you think that's going to be the defining factor of this election, is going to be the youth vote?
Well, before I answer that, I should really underline that I'm against this, people using the terminology of the Generation Z and how they are, you know, thinking or acting like differently from the general public. It's just a regular Turkish youth. I think they're going to be divided just as they were a decade or two ago. You know, some of them are going to be liberals, some are going to be conservatives, some are going to be more nationalistic. So I don't foresee that the, and I actually believe in this, not just for Turkey, but for the rest of the world, that the new generations are not any different than our, you know, our generation when we were young. I think the big misunderstanding is that they are now more loud, they are now able to freely communicate and very cheaply across the globe, and they are now more, louder than they were before. But when it comes to voting practices by the youth, I don't think it's going to be any different than before. Now, talking about Erdogan giving, a raise yesterday, I think it was, a new raise, is not something unplanned. Erdogan has been increasing all the pays, starting with minimum wage, going through with the state workers and the state employees, and also with the retired people. He's been raising all these pays for the last almost 2 years. That is his way, that, as he explained, to fight the buying power of the people for the last 2 years. So to say that this was a politically motivated raise a couple of days before the elections, one must know nothing about Turkish economy, and one must know nothing about how Erdogan has been fighting the inflation for the last 2 years. So I don't foresee it as an electoral move. It is just the way Erdogan has been fighting inflation for the last 2 years.
Ambassador Pearson, I will come to you in just a second, but I want to put that point to Sinan Ulgen, who's also in Istanbul. Sinan, this is a very hyper-local election. It's almost that domestic politics, domestic inflation, domestic economy is where this battleground is. Our guest in Turkey, in Istanbul, has said, actually, this wasn't a bribe, this was always planned, but coming days before the election, it must be of concern, right?
Well, obviously, it's a concern, and I don't agree at all with the assessment that was just made. You don't fight inflation by raising wages. This is called incomes policy. You can help people to improve their purchasing power, but ultimately what you need to do is to fight inflation itself. And that's not something that this government has done. On the contrary. Inflation.
Please don't.
Excuse me, I didn't. I paid you respect listening to you.
That is not. Oh, no, let's. Oh, no, I'll come to you in a minute.
Disturbing your words.
Oh, no, I will come to you in a moment. Let Sinan finish his thought, and then I'll come to you in a minute.
Thank you. So the inflation in Turkey is totally self-induced. And it's a result of major macro policy mistakes, the thinking going that you need to lower the interest rate in order to fight inflation. That's quite a unique and novel approach, and it hasn't worked. It was never going to work. So, and as a result, this has become the main hindrance to the popularity of the government, a government that successfully steered the economy for a number of years. But now, as a result of this, this is having political consequences. And this is the reason why, unlike previous years, this is going to be a very difficult struggle for President Erdogan, politically speaking.
Well, let's bring in the international section into this right now. And I want to start with Ambassador Pearson. Ambassador Pearson, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu doesn't have an international presence. No one really votes in an election, whether it's the US, the UK, Turkey, on foreign policy. It's always about domestic politics. But the international community is clearly watching this. Does the US have a preferred candidate here, do you think?
Does the U.S. have a preferred candidate? I would say that the U.S. view consistently is that Turkey should be and act like fully a democratic country. So the United States is worried when it sees opposition politicians jailed for years. It's worried when it sees journalists arrested. It worries when a government controls all of the media. So those are the things without regard to a particular person or party that the United States is concerned about. And Turkey has had a long history of striving for democracy. None of us are perfect, but that's a major concern. And then I think the second major concern is the political orientation long term of Turkey. Is it a member of NATO, really, or is it a non-aligned state that uses NATO when it's convenient and ignores it when it's not? Those are the kinds of questions that probably are concerning Americans.
Ano Erim, one of the things that President Erdogan has done is put Turkey firmly back on the international map. It's become a player once more. Do you think that the opposition can carry that on, or do you think it's only Erdogan that can really make that work?
On the international scene, let's go back to the words of Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu himself. He has said over and over that he will change the Turkish foreign policy by 180 degrees. His chief advisor and a member of his party administration, a former ambassador, has had many statements where he actually said they questioned Turkey's presence and Turkey's help to Azerbaijan. They have definitely questioned, well, more than questioned, actually. They claim that Turkey should be out of Syria, Turkey should be out of Libya, and things like that. So just by their own words, we do understand, whether you agree or not with the Turkish foreign policy in the last several years and the way Erdogan is driving Turkey in the international scene, we do know that when and if Kılıçdaroğlu is elected, all of these will be reversed. How do we know this? Because this is an exact verbatim statement made by Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu himself and his top foreign policy advisor, former ambassador of the Republic of Turkey.
Sinan, that's one of the things that people are using to criticize the opposition with, that there is no foreign policy experience there. And it is a very dangerous route that potentially the opposition, if they come to power, could take, reversing key foreign policy victories, foreign policy policies for Istanbul, for Ankara. Do you think that's a genuine fear?
No, it's not. Because Turkey overall has deep foreign policy experience. And when you look at the policy platform and the governance structure of the opposition, on foreign policy, it's very clear. They want to reinstitutionalize foreign policy making, which means that, yes, obviously the executive president has powers under this constitution, but these will be used in a manner where the institutional intelligence will also be a part of decision making. So if there are going to be major decisions that will drive the future of foreign policy, this will be taken in an environment where you have that sort of institutional experience, which exists today in Turkey, that will come into play. No single decision will take major decisions that can shift the course of Turkish foreign policy. That was one of the main strategic mistakes of past years, and here the case is in Syria, how Turkish foreign policy almost overnight changed by sidelining the major achievements of Republican-era Turkey, which was non-interference in the domestic affairs of neighboring countries. That principle was jettisoned almost overnight. And the reason why it was jettisoned, it was this lack of inclusive governance, which is what the government, which is what the opposition side is promising. So yes, ultimately they may decide to withdraw from Syria. They may decide to withdraw from Libya, but that's going to come after a concerted practice of dialogue, and therefore ultimately the decision will be an institutional decision and not a personal one. And that, I think, is good for the country because it will make Turkey a much more predictable ally.
Ambassador Pearson, where do you land on all of this? Do you think that the opposition is weak on foreign policy and might not be able to take the steps that Sinan just said? Or do you think that actually this will be a good time for a reset if they do win?
Well, I think their purpose is to reset the foreign policy. And I will say, given my own experience in Turkey 20 years ago, Turkey had a core of very excellent, very expert and very persuasive diplomats at that time, whom I respected enormously. If that asset is still in Turkey, then I think that Turkey won't be erratic about its approach to foreign policy. But on the other hand, I do think that Turkey will make its own choices. To be honest with you, it's hard for me to see what Turkey has gained from 10 years in Syria. And that's a question that I'm sure the Turkish people are mulling over and deciding what to do about. And as I mentioned, I'm concerned, and a lot of others are, what is Turkey's real orientation as a country? Would it rather be the head of a non-aligned coalition regional grouping, or would it really like to be part of the NATO process of building relationships? The West, the United States, and the EU are the biggest markets that Turkey has and probably will have. Chinese products are underselling Turkish products on the Turkish market today. So those are the kinds of things that I think a mature approach to an issue like the orientation is important. And also on the economic side, and I'll close with this, Turkey today is ranked as 19th in the world. When I was there 20 years ago, it was 16th in the world. So the promises of putting Turkey into the top 10 never eventualized. So I'm sure the Turkish people would like to see Turkey get back to that point where they're feeling good about their place in the world and building wealth for their country and their citizens.
Onur Erim in Istanbul, it's been 20 years. Erdogan has had his chance. It must be time for a change, surely.
Sure. Is that a question?
That is the question. I wanted to know your thoughts.
Well, you go back to the basics. There's two things. Why change something that's going good? And even if so, if it's going good and that, you just change for the sake of changing, then you need something. When you're changing, you need something better. And there's just not a choice.
Sinan, would you agree with that?
No, I totally disagree, but it's up to the Turkish electorate to decide. And I think the Turkish electorate will this time around give the mandate to the opposition.
Now, one of the things, Sinan, that Onur said that I wanted to get back to you about was this idea that the youth vote don't count. But for the opposition, they are really going out and trying to count and court that youth vote. 5 million of them might make a difference. Will they succeed?
Yes, and there as well, I think we have a different viewpoint. The youth vote is different. The reason why it's different is that when you look at the polls and the questions in those polls, their level of support for a set of different political actors is different than the average support in the rest of the population. So that's what you get from the polls. Secondly, the way that they get their political information is also very different. In Turkey, the median age is 32 or 33, so it's still a young population. But when the population, when you take the older generation, they're in a way stuck to their traditional ways of trying to consume political information from television, from printed media. Youth is not like that. That's the case for the rest of the world too. They get the information from digital, from social media, from platforms.
Sorry, Sinan, we are actually running out of time, and I do want to come for one final question to Onur Erim. Onur, is there anything you've heard in the last half an hour that might be able to change your mind on whether Erdogan will win this election or not?
No, I didn't need to hear anything in the last half hour to vote for Erdogan. That my mind has been made before, and if there was 0.001% chance that was left for me to vote for somebody else, was finished when Kılıçdaroğlu was announced as the opposition running mate, whose name, Kılıçdaroğlu's name, has been repeatedly been spelled as the candidate who cannot win by the very members of their coalition. The five members of that, the rest of the five members of that coalition, including a lot of the top guys within CHP as well. So if there was any slim chance left for me to vote, to consider to vote for somebody else, when Kılıçdaroğlu was announced, that was it.
I want to thank all our guests, Onur Erim, W. Robert Pearson, and Sinan Ulgen. And I want to thank you as well for watching. Now, you can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.